This is Molly Smith introducing our annual Bringing America Back to Life speaker series. At this annual event, we invite those on the front lines of the pro-life and family movement to come together for a convention dedicated to exploring the full spectrum of issues and challenges that confront us as we continue to fight for the sanctity of human life, to protect our God-given family structure. We trust you will be edified and encouraged as you listen to our fine roster of speakers who by their articulate, thoughtful, expert presentations eloquently defend the right to life. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Raymond D'Souza. Raymond is Brazilian by birth, Catholic by grace, and an American citizen. He is the delegate for International Missions for Human Life International and regularly travels all over the world to represent HLI in mission activities to refute the culture of death and proclaim the gospel of life. His topic, the culture of death and the gospel of life.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to you. Very good. One thing that our MC did not say that he said reserved for me, I am Brazilian by birth, Catholic by grace, and American by choice. I've just came yesterday from a trip to New Zealand and Australia on behalf of Human Life International, speaking engagements in both countries. And I was amazed to see how the American president today is thoroughly maligned by the so-called liberal media. Amazing. In Australia and New Zealand, they have the most horrible idea about Mr. Donald Trump. Everything he does or says is seen only systematically through a jaundiced eye. So much so that I learned this little story to share with you that Trump invited the Pope for lunch in his yacht. And the Pope came. While they were eating, wind came and took the Pope's skull cap into the water. Immediately, one of the sailors said, "Mr. Trump, I will pick it up." Trump said, "No, I will do it." He climbs down the ship. He walks on the water and he picks the skull cap and brings back to the Pope. The Pope was amazed. People were silent. The following day, CNN had this headline, "Trump cannot swim." Okay. So, there's nothing one can do that will please the secular so-called media. Now, I became involved in the pro-life movement many, many moons ago. What triggered my involvement was one event that I beheld, I contemplated in Montreal. I had left Brazil for Canada. I was studying French. French is my second language. And I was going to my French classes. There's a street called St. Catherine, downtown Montreal. There was a demonstration there of people opposing, protesting against the hunting of baby seals, led by, I'm not mistaken, it was Jane Fonda. You remember her, Hanoi Jane? Huh? And she was leading the demonstration. They were protesting furiously, vitriolically, against the murder of the poor little creatures who were born at the end of winter. And the hunters go up the snow and they kill the baby and remove the skin to make fur coats, which are very expensive, very delicate skin. And there was a picture of a billboard showing a woman very elegantly dressed with high heel shoes and pulling a fur coat. And the coat left a trail of blood on the ground. And it was written, "It takes 10 dumb animals to make one coat, but only one to wear it." It's a very good point. And they were vitriolic. Fonda was amazing, saying that what a horrible thing to do. Why to kill these poor animals to fend the vanity of these bourgeois women? Okay, I took note of the event and moved on. But 1 week later, in the same St. Catherine Street, there was another demonstration demanding legal free abortion. And wherever I travel to the 38 countries I've visited, I ask people the same question. Give me one reason, just one, why the baby seal should have its life defended by the law, but not the baby human. And nobody gives any reason. And yet, you find people who agree with both. You can be pro-choice with abortion, but you cannot be pro-choice with fur coats. What happened? Likewise here in the States. Woe betide you if you break an egg of a bald eagle. $100,000 fine and some time in jail. I'm not against this. You must protect the bird. Of course you do. But why should the pre-born American have an open season for hunting? This contradiction, this relativism, is a curse of our time. When people can live in contradiction, the animal has the right to live, but the human does not. And they defend both situations. That is what Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, at the Mass of the Conclave that elected him Pope, he denounced the dictatorship of relativism. How this relativism is imposed upon us. You can be pro-choice with abortion, but you cannot be pro-choice with bald eagles or baby seals. This dictatorship is imposed upon us in every aspect, every walk of life. And basically, people are playing God, politicians in particular. They decide what good is and what evil is, and they impose their choice upon us. I remember in Australia, when I was living there in Perth, we had a campaign, a pro-life campaign, with a little flyer with a beautiful baby smiling. On one side, it was written, helping the anti-smoking lobby. Smoking, when pregnant, harms your baby. On the other side, aborting, when pregnant, kills your baby. Now, so you cannot harm, but you can kill? What kind of logic is this? This is the dictatorship of relativism. It happens in Australia as well. For example, we had some different abortion laws depending on the state. In Western Australia, abortion was legal up to 20 weeks, but in South Australia, up to twice as many. So it depends on which side of the border the abortion takes place. On one side is a murder. On the other side is a human right. Now, who gave politicians this power to decide who can live, who can die? And as a result of this, we have the what Pope John Paul II called the cafeteria Catholic. This mentality has entered the Catholic Church. When there are Catholics who are strongly in defense of so-called animal rights, but very lukewarm defending human rights, the rights to live. And they call the cafeteria. You know, a cafeteria, you pick up your tray and you go to the counter and you pick the thing you want to eat and leave behind what you don't like. Likewise, among many Catholics, great many Catholics, we have the cafeteria mentality. When I accept what I agree to accept and leave out of my life what I disagree with. I remember when Pope Benedict was elected, I was in Australia at the time, there was that famous picture with the arms open, and below it was written, "Attention, cafeteria Catholics, the cafeteria is closed." Well, that's what we'd like to see, to bring logic and common sense back into this situation. The encyclical letter Evangelium Vitae of John Paul II, which I recommend every single person, Catholic or non-Catholic, does not matter, to read with attention, where he denounces what he called the culture of death. The culture of death is a situation in which it doesn't produce any life. There's nothing growing except the number of the dead. He broke it down into three stages. When it's one, contraception; two, abortion; three, euthanasia. Let's take one by one briefly. What we see in the question of contraception is not my purpose here to give the teaching of the Catholic Church in Humanae Vitae on contraception. It's enough to say that the marital embrace within marriage has two characteristics. One, the unitive; two, the procreative. Contraception has the unitive without the procreative. IVF has the procreative without the unitive. Both are wrong. But the interesting thing to note about contraception is the consequence of depopulation. You know, that for a country to have, to keep its population the same number, every couple should have, on the average, 2.1 children. It's not the two kids and a piece of another one. It's not this. It's like this. It's a statistic. You know? You have 10 couples, 9 who have 2 children, and the 10th who have 3. If that happens, the population remains exactly the same. Today in Europe, not one country has more than 2. Not one country. Every year, More Europeans die than are born. Gradually. I was in London about 5 years ago in a Catholic conference, and I learned this dialogue between two people. One was a mullah from a local mosque. The other one was a priest from the Church of England. And the mullah said to the Christian, "Do you know, by the end of this century, all the great cathedrals of England will be our mosques. Do you know why? Because we have children and you don't." You can't beat that. According to the current legislation, if you are born in the UK, you are British. You have. Likewise in France. I spent 1 year in France before coming to the States. And there the motto of the Islamics was, "Par les ventres de nos femmes, nous allons conquérir l'Europe." By the wombs of our women, we shall conquer Europe. Here we have the concrete result of the contraceptive mentality. The Christian civilization in the continent that gave its best, which was Europe, is reaching its twilight. With the twilight, darkness comes, and the crescent moon comes up on the other side. So unless there is a great change of conversion, literally, we're going to have the European Union will be quite different by the end of the century. This mentality has also invaded Christian peoples, especially Catholic peoples. There was a time when a numerous family, a large family, was seen as a blessing. Today, not exactly the same. People ask you, if you have 4 children or more, oh, 4 kids, don't you guys have television, something like that. Huh? And then I have been blessed with being the father of 8 children. Now, that's a real scandal, right? And I know, clap to my wife. She did all the work. And anyway, so in Perth, when we had only 7, imagine, only 7, I had a minibus to take the crowd to Mass. And as we went one day, there was one gentleman standing there by the door. And the door of the minibus opened, came out 1 kid, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 5, and 6, and 7. And he was annoyed by that. And he was not very friendly with me. And he said, "Excuse me, Mr. De Souza, are they all yours? Or is it an outing of a primary school?" Okay, you want to have fun? Let's have fun. I said, "Yes, yes, of course, they are all mine. My wife, too, as a matter of fact. You see, it's a kind of a teamwork, you know. I could not do them all by myself. I'm not that good, you know." And then he realized I was making fun of him. Then he lost his temper. "Excuse me, sir, but this is irresponsible. 7 children. We had only 7. The 8th came later on to celebrate it. And 7 children in this day and age with unemployment, high prices. How irresponsible. How can you do such a thing?" I said, "How we did it? It was not too difficult at all, coming to think of it. You know, I don't know what the fuss is all about." But I'm making fun of it. But it used to be a blessing to have children. And today we complain about the lack of vocations to the priesthood and the religious life. Because the vocation is an exception to the rule. The average rule for most mankind is to grow and multiply, get married and have children. That's the normal. The vocation to be a priest or a nun is an exception. So when you have very few children, we have even fewer vocations. I have 5 sons. My dream is one of them will be called by the Lord to be a priest. I would love to receive Holy Communion from my own son, but so far, nothing. But one daughter of mine, Teresa, she wanted to be a Carmelite. I was thrilled. And like every female, she changed her mind. What can I do? Okay. But in any event, I told her one day, I said, "Look, Teresa, if you become a nun, you're going to be a spouse of Christ. And I will have the best son-in-law I could ever imagine in my life." Okay. It is... As the priest says at Mass, lift up your hearts. Let's see things from a higher perspective. But unfortunately, since the contraception not always work, the chemical pills that the women take wreck their lives, their healths, and the other devices fail very often. That's why, according to we have found out the statistics, the vast majority of abortions in this country is because contraception failed or they didn't use it properly, whatever. So abortion became here a backup for failed contraception. Then one abyss calls out the other abyss. In this case, abortion. Well, we all know how evil abortion is. I don't have to go into detail, except that in Australia we had a debate about abortion cases of rape, which is rare, but I believe it can happen. It does happen. And I propose, very well, if you guys want to abort the baby, let the rapist be hanged on the same day. And they said, wait a minute. We don't have capital punishment here in Australia. Oh, the guilty walks away scot-free, and the innocent dies. What kind of logic is this? But the main argument I've encountered was in Portugal. Portugal had a referendum 7 years ago about abortion. It was the first time when the government asked the people to accept abortion for the first 10 weeks of pregnancy. Every other country, it was imposed. Here was a Supreme Court. In Canada was a parliament, in Australia was a parliament, other countries were a president, but not Portugal. It's a very Catholic country, Fatima land, you know. So the government asked the people, there was a referendum. Because I speak Portuguese, it's my first language, I went to Portugal. I gave talks in parishes in Lisbon and in Fatima, was on television, radio, the whole 9 yards. When referendum day came, 52% of the Portuguese people not even bothered to go to vote. 52%. Barbecue, swimming pool, sports, television, movie, party, whatever. Of the 48% who voted, 53% voted yes. It was still a minority regarding the total, but since more than half couldn't be bothered, the government approved abortion without ado. I must also recognize that very little was done by the Catholic hierarchy in Portugal to oppose that. Very little. A few days later, they also approved the so-called homosexual marriage without any opposition from religious leaders. But that was in February. In May is Fatima month. May 13th, there were about 2 million Portuguese there in Fatima in the sanctuary, and they are praying rosaries, lighting candles, moving on their knees, crying, singing Ave, Ave, Ave Maria, and they expect those prayers to be pleasing to God. When they had opportunity to stop abortion and teach the world a lesson that the people could manifest itself, they let go. And here, my friends, in my estimation, from my experience around the world, is our greatest enemy. It's not the abortion lobby or the homosexual lobby or whatever other lobby. It is the lukewarmness among ourselves. The lukewarmness of the good, the tepidity, the lack of love of God and of neighbor. Actually, the word lukewarm is so disgusting to God our Lord, it appears only once in the whole Bible. Only once. Apocalypse 3:15. When Jesus sent a message to the angel or bishop of Laodicea and says, you are neither hot nor cold. Because you are lukewarm, I will spit you out, vomit you. That's a very graphic language for he who is sweet and meek and humble of heart. But that's such a way, that's our greatest enemy. That's why conferences of this nature are most important, to shake up our friends, our parishes, our schools, or whatever, to wake up and realize that our main enemy is here with ourselves. Lukewarmness, tepidity. As abortion goes on, the spread around the world, the other arguments. I had a debate with a bunch of communists there in Portugal about abortion in the case of risk of death for the mother. And nowadays it's rare, but it may also happen, of course. And, excuse me, I also tell you the story. I knew a lady in Brazil who was married for about 10 years, and she had no children. And she was very, very sad about that. All her siblings had children, she had none. And she went to see a doctor, and he said, well, ma'am, there is now such and such and such treatment you can do, and you may conceive. She said, yes, I want that. She followed the treatment, and she conceived. And she was the happiest girl in the neighborhood, as happy as a lark. When she felt the little kicks, and she was telling everybody about this, she was so happy. She was going to be a mother, finally. Well, unfortunately, at the moment of giving birth, the tricky part of having babies, at the moment of giving birth, my wife tells me. So she had to be rushed to the emergency for a cesarean surgery of emergency, and she lost lots of blood. Everything, lots of things went wrong. The doctor told her, "Ma'am, you stop that treatment. If you had been here half an hour late, you'll be dead, you and your baby. So you stop this treatment. It's not for you. Your body cannot carry a pregnancy, so be happy you have one child and you survived. Because if you get pregnant again, you die. Because it's the risk is way too high." Oh, very well. She stopped the treatment. But 3 years later, she's again pregnant. The doctor told her, "Ma'am, I suggest that you terminate this pregnancy. Because the risk is so high that you can't survive this." But she couldn't agree with the idea of killing her own child. She said, "But doctor, it's my business. Ma'am, I don't want you to kill anybody, but please understand, you have no choice. You die. Or the risk is so high." She was a very simple woman. She said, "Well, doctor, try to save both of us, the two." She said, "Very well, that's what you want. I will spare you the details of a dreadful cesarean surgery. Her womb was open for hours. There were infections. The baby was born with all kinds of wounds. It was put in an incubator. Whatever could go wrong did go wrong. But she never died. And she never repented having taken the risk. Because she said, I had a problem in my body, not my baby. My baby was normal." She did not know what she was saying, but she was defending a basic principle of natural law, that the ends do not justify the means. You have a good end in your mind to achieve. The means you use must be good. Say, for example, this gentleman's son needs a liver transplant. So his grandson is healthy. I go there, I grab his grandson, I kill him, I take his liver and give to the other one. See, I saved his life. I did a good thing. Yeah, but look at the means you used. The ends never justify the means. An innocent person can never be voluntarily killed. We have the example, a more beautiful example, of Santa Gemma Moller. You may have heard of her, of course. And she was expecting her third or fourth baby, and she had a tumor in the uterus. The doctor said, "If we can operate to remove the tumor, but you risk losing the baby." And she said, "No, I won't take the chance." Baby was born, a girl called Gianna Moller, same name, and Santa Gianna died a few weeks later. She was beatified and canonized by Pope John Paul II. And interesting enough, just a parenthesis here for Catholics, there have been only three saints in the life of the whole Catholic Church who were canonized, and their children were present at the canonization ceremony. Can you imagine? See your own mother and your father canonized there. But there is only one case, only one, when the saint was canonized and the spouse was there, was Santa Gianna Mola. When she was canonized, her husband, Mr. Mola, was there in Rome. Now, for us here who are a married man, can you imagine seeing your own wife canonized? You go home, there's a statue of your wife there in the picture. You start praying, "Come on, these Catholics are nuts. This is crazy stuff." Anyway, a third example of a mother who could die is this girl who was about 16, 17 years old. She was engaged to be married to a very, very good young man. And then she appears pregnant. And the father was not her fiancé. And she refused to tell the family who the father was. Now picture yourselves, it's your daughter or your sister. She's pregnant. Her fiancé is shocked. He had nothing to do with that. And she will not tell anybody who the father was. You know this girl. Mary, most holy, the mother of Jesus. Teenager. Fiancé, engaged to Saint Joseph, was a very good young man. She appears pregnant. And she never told anybody who the father was. Now, we take this for granted, but we forget that according to the law of Moses, she would suffer lapidation, death by stoning. So when she said yes to the angel, she knew very well the risk of death she was taking. But she was faithful to God's love. And because of the likes of me and of you, she said yes. And we had Jesus, and here we are, baptized Christians by the grace of God. Go back to the first lady that had the cesarean surgeries. The second case, the kid who was put in the incubator survived. It was a boy. I was told that only boys cause this kind of trouble. The girls never cause that, but I don't know if it's true. I don't know. Anyway, the boy grew up. Today he's a man, and he is now here talking to you. It was my mother. I have the privilege to have a heroine as my mother. She's gone to her eternal reward. She died some 15 years ago. And to me, she's an example of someone who loved her neighbor, in this case was her son, more than herself. I think I can appreciate what abortion is. If she had heard, given her consent to the doctor's suggestion, today I would not be here. It would be another speaker. For me, this was an incredible revelation to see the true love of a mother. A mother who is prepared to love her child above her own life. The third stage of the culture of death is euthanasia. Interesting. In abortion, the parents kill their children. In euthanasia, is a payback. Children kill their parents. From reports I have read, even here in the States, euthanasia is practiced, is illegal, of course. But grandpa or grandma or mama or papa is not well, let's help him rest in peace. And we give our nodding to the doctor's suggestion to give an extra dose of morphine, and the heart stops quietly during the night and the person dies. The country I find worse in this matter is Holland, where in some cases the doctor has the choice. If the doctor believes it's not worth keeping your life, he will perform the euthanasia with or without your consent. In Belgium, which is Belgium is a Catholic monarchy. We have a Catholic king, something we don't have these days. Huh? And a couple of years ago, he signed the euthanasia law for children. When children who are sick and they prefer to die and the parents have no say in the matter. But you see, this is a culture of death. There's no life here. Whether in contraception, in abortion, euthanasia. Then you have the famous, now to finish, the unnaturalness of this culture, we have the so-called homosexual union and the transgenders. The I don't know, those of you, I don't refer to the young people, but those of you who have the hair already silvered by the wisdom of age, in our childhood or in our early teens, we never imagined that one day there will be an act of a president or a Supreme Court allowing same-sex marriage. It would be unthinkable. It's ridiculous. Or transgenders. And to have a president who signs an executive order to allow transgender men into girls' bathrooms, coming from the presidency of the country, that act by Burak Insane Osama was absolutely stupid and crazy to do that. Thank God that Trump finished with that. I remember in Australia, I was challenged. One person said to me, "Mr. D'Souza, you don't know the trauma through which a transgender person go through. You don't know. The conflict." I said, "Yes, I do. Because it happened to me. For a period of my life, I, as a male, felt locked up in a female body. I couldn't think with clarity. Happened to me. But then I was born. And when that happened, then I was free from the female body, my mama." Okay. Now, I just said, look, it is impossible to change sex. Every single cell in my body says, I'm a male. Every single cell in any girl's body says, she's a female. You cannot change this. Oh, one can feed oneself with hormones to change the shape of the body or mutilate oneself. Poor people. No wonder so many suicides take place among those people. No wonder so many. Because it's so anti-natural. So that after a while, nature revolts. John Paul II speaks of the gospel of life in the same encyclical letter. And in our group, Human Life International, we propose three courses of action to counteract the culture of death. One is prayer. Two, study, knowledge. Three, action. When we say prayer, we know that's so important, but it's never enough. Those of us who have the good habit of observing a holy hour, we should multiply those holy hours to shake the columns of the firmament and say to our Lord, Lord, please intervene. Because left to ourselves, humanly speaking, we are doomed. We need divine grace. As our Lord Jesus Christ clearly says in the gospel, without me, you can do nothing. Then, the one devotion, outside there will be some volunteers distributing this flyer. I'd like you to, each one of you to take one of those, explain the work of Human Life International. Well, inside of it, there will be a little holy card with a picture of Saint Michael the Archangel, in which we pray that famous prayer of Pope Leo XIII, Saint Michael the Archangel defenders in the battle, for the conversion of the abortionists, because abortion is something devilish. That's a human sacrifice to the devil. That's what abortion is. And we recommend everyone develop the knowledge and the devotion to the holy angels. Rediscover the angelic dimension of reality. We are here full of human beings. This also full of angels of both kinds. So the necessity to develop our spiritual life with the angelic friends, angelic brothers, so to speak, to strengthen us in the combat. As Saint Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, our war is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. We are dealing with a devilish action. In this country, Satanism is growing incredibly. You saw the case of Oklahoma with the statues of Lucifer, and in Florida, Satanists distributed coloring books with Satanist pictures to the kids in primary schools. They say, if Christians can do that, so can we. Freedom of religion. Formation of the mind. We have here outside there an incredible variety of material to educate our minds with the knowledge of the culture of life. And that we must, each one of us should be an apologist of the culture of life. To be able to explain with clarity, with clear arguments, with wit, why we must defend life and oppose the culture of death. Action. I tend to suggest in conferences like this one that the organizer of the conference have a meeting and send an email to everybody suggesting one course of action, one initiative we could do all together. Because we have parallel good works here, lots of us. But if we could have from time to time one action that we all do at the same time, could be a petition, could be sending emails to a particular politician to make his life a hell, or whatever we can do, anything that we can work together in this area. And that would be an aspect of the action. We do already our own respective actions. But if we could work together somehow, it would be a great development, a great step up. Let me finish with a little story. There was a nun teaching catechism to a group of kids. And she was telling them about God's omnipotence. And the kid said, omni what? Omnipotence. Wow. What's that? Omni, from the Latin all, potence, power. God is all powerful. God can do anything. And the kid said, really? No kidding. No kidding. Really. Sister said, one of the kids, could God change the swimming pool into Coca-Cola? And she said, well, I don't think the Lord is planning this particular feat now. But look, if you could change water into wine, why not Coke? It makes no difference. The same power. Oh, the kids were very happy about that. Another kid asked her, sister, could God change our books into chocolates so we could eat them and learn everything? It's become a theological problem here. And then the nun said, well, I don't think the Lord is planning this particular course of action. But look, he's the Lord of nature, Lord of matter. If you could multiply fish and bread, why not change books into chocolates? Perfect. There was one little girl in the front row, very sad and crestfallen. And she said, "Mary, what happened?" "Oh, sister," she replied, "I don't believe that God is almighty. There's one thing that I've been praying for such a long time, but begging the Lord to do it, but he's never done it. I know he wants to do it. It's good. He wants to do it, but he never, because he cannot do it. And people pray all the time for him to do it, but he never does it. So I don't think he's almighty." Oh, the kids went quiet and silent. And she said, "Mary, you tell me what you think God cannot do, and I'll guarantee, I'll promise you he can do it." "Oh, sister, never mind. Actually, I'm going to start praying about this. If you could do it, it'd be so marvelous, so great. People would be so happy if you could do it, but he cannot do it. That's why I don't pray anymore." Of course, all the kids were very curious to know what it was, and you are very curious too yourselves. I'm taking my time on purpose. And then she said, "Sister, God cannot please everybody all the time. God cannot please everybody. Take Jesus Christ, our blessed Lord. Did he please all the time everybody? No. Did he make only friends? No. On the contrary, the more he was affirming his message, the more enemies he made. Therefore, the same applies to us. The servant cannot be greater than the master. When we stand up to defend the culture of life, we will make enemies, even in the most unsuspected quarters. And if we don't make enemies, something is wrong with us. In this battle between life and death, as Moses said to the people, you have to choose between life and death. Choose life. We have chosen life by God's grace, but that comes with a price. In our families, in our workplace, even in our churches, we won't make only friends. But as Mother Teresa of Calcutta said once, which I quote often, God does not expect us to be successful. He expects us to be faithful. If each one of us in our respective walk of life, if you are faithful to this calling, in a life of a prayer, in the life of study, of knowledge, in the life of action, we can be certain that we'll be faithful. And as St. John of Arc would say, soldiers will fight, but God gives the victory. Our job is to keep up the fight until the end. If you don't succeed, you die trying. But we are certain that our reward will be superabundantly great. Thank you for your time. God bless you.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you also have a book signing, is that correct?
No.
You do not. That's off the list right there. It's not, he'll then just buy any book, have him sign it. He'll sign whatever you have. That's fine. The question, just a couple things before we go to a question or two. If you will not be able to stay for tonight's dinner, just if you do have that, your folder with the donation, if you wouldn't mind filling that out beforehand, if you cannot stay for dinner. Again, it's all done by volunteers, and it's 100% a volunteer organization. So, of course, it'd be nice if you have to leave tonight. If you're going to be here, we'll talk about it later. Photos, this gentleman right there is taking photos. Wait a minute, hold on. Good enough. All right, there you go. You're supposed to pose with me. All right. Those photos will be available, if I'm not mistaken, on the Bringing America Back to Life website. And you're Hal, am I right?
Yes.
Well, Hal, thank you so much. And by the way, are you getting paid to do this, Hal?
Absolutely.
He is getting paid. Wait a minute, there's a mistake here. Hold on. Regardless, thank you for doing that. There's a lie here. 100%, 99% volunteer is what we have. Event is over, we want to clear the room quickly again so we can start our next one on time at 4:00. Well, a couple questions for you. We always hear the problems, and so people want to know bright spots, because you travel the world, you speak so many languages. Now, for example, in Europe, and we know the statistics, and they're horrific, of the Muslims and the birth rate taking over. Are there any bright spots? Do you see a place in Europe where Christianity is coming back?
I have seen in Hungary, mainly in countries of the Eastern European areas. I was in Hungary last year, and Hungary is the only country in Europe whose constitution defends life from conception to natural death. In Latin America, yeah, the only one. As they left the communist regime, the president realized that the country was shrinking. In the days of communism, abortion was untrammeled. So that's the one country, one give hope. Likewise, Slovakia, I was also in Bratislava, and there's a whole movement now to encourage people to have more children. That was a blessing. In Latin America, the country I know that is doing well is actually Paraguay, also has the same constitution that has defended life from conception to natural death. Other countries in Europe, unfortunately, not great signs of, especially the Scandinavian countries, they are completely doomed. They won't survive. They will not. The only one I know really for sure is Hungary. Romania a little bit, and Slovakia also coming in a good direction. Ah, sorry. Well, Poland has been stable in this area, but the population doesn't grow. It remains stable. We can hope that the way the president is doing things now, encouraging people to and working with the church as well, encouraging people to have larger families and to avoid unwanted immigration, which is a fundamental problem that they face there.
So evidently, go to Europe now. Because it's in trouble. But I do want to end up on one thing, because I'm just so fascinated by all the languages that you speak in your travels around the world. Just give us that one. Now, you've told us Latin America and a couple of different things, but that one bright spot where you say, here I see hope. It doesn't have to be what country, but just whether someone you talk to, some story, but just leave us with that bit of hope, and we'll say thank you.
In the diocese of Sonson Rio Negro in Colombia, I was there a year and a half ago with our team of speakers from Human Life International, and we gave a 4 days training to 400 seminarians, 200 priests, and 350 lay leaders of the diocese of Colombia. And it was incredible, really, really great. And 2 weeks ago, I was in Venezuela, diocese of Maturin, when we spoke also to priests, to seminarians, to about 2,000 people, especially university students in secular state universities. I addressed about 600 university students about the proofs of God's existence in terms of logic and science, and the response was simply excellent. So there are people like Human Life International in Latin America promoting the culture of life, and the response has been positive. Our Lord is active all the time. Grace is given to everyone. And here and there, I found in these dioceses, the bishop invited us to go there to the diocese, provided every possible means for us to work in the place. And our hope is that there will be more and more bishops like him, like them, that you invite more speakers into their countries to revitalize the culture of life. So there is hope. But there's a lot of work, a lot of prayer, a lot of sacrifice is required to keep the momentum going. Voila.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Raymond D'Souza, Delegate for International Missions for Human Life International, or HLI, and 2017 Bringing America Back to Life Convention speaker.